Welcome to Dynasty Sports Empire, the podcast, a part of the DynastySportsEmpire.com podcast network. Dare I say the flagship podcast of the DynastySportsEmpire.com podcast network. We bring you the latest in sports and fantasy sports with, shall we say, a lighter approach to what most people consider a very serious undertaking. On the show today, we continue our MLB divisional previews with the NL East. We are also joined by Ryan Bloomfield from FantasyHQ.com to talk about fantasy baseball, players he likes, sleepers, different metrics he looks at, all strategies for fantasy baseball. It's a really good conversation. You'll find that later in the program. I think you'll really, really enjoy that. And then Tim and I talk a little bit during the outro. As we turn the corner from the cold, dreary winter into the warmer days of spring, a new season of fantasy baseball begins at our friends at DynastySportsEmpire.com. DynastySportsEmpire.com offers you a unique fantasy baseball experience for owners young and old and abilities of all levels. So what makes DSE unique? For starters, you can draft high school and international baseball phenoms as young as 16, retain ownership of your favorite players for their entire baseball career, and build a cash cow contender that would make any front office envious for years to come. Check out all the fantasy baseball formats over at DynastySportsEmpire.com today, or tweet them at DSE Fantasy. That's DSE Fantasy on Twitter, or online at DynastySportsEmpire.com. And welcome to Dynasty Sports Empire, the podcast. My name is Jeff Roman. I'm your host. And alongside me tonight and every night is a guy who did not have Oral Roberts in the Sweet 16, Tim Reinhart. Welcome, Tim.
I don't think that's so low, man. Wow. I don't think anybody had Oral Roberts in the first round, but certainly not me. I think not only was it that bad, but one of my final four picks got knocked out in the play-in game.
Oh no!
Michigan State. Wow! Because Brian talked them up so well, and they're in the Big Ten. And man, the Big Ten. Who's Big left? Ten.
Yeah.
Who's left?
Michigan. I mean, your friends to the north, Michigan, are the only team left. So
that's the only Big Ten team left.
I asked you this over text and you dodged it. So I'm going to ask again.
I straight up did.
Yeah.
Would you rather? Ignored the whole text.
Yeah. You rejected my proposal and you just
substituted. Did I respond at least and just not? I think I responded. Yeah, I just didn't.
You did respond. You just didn't answer the question.
Sir.
So would you rather? Okay. Would you rather have no Big Ten teams in the Sweet 16, or would you rather have Michigan be the only Big Ten team in the Sweet 16?
Is there like a third option where I can like chop off my pinky or? man, that's a tough question because, I mean, at this point, the Big Ten has been just toasted. So I mean, someone may as well just go ahead and finish the job, and that'll be it. So.
What is your theory about the Big Ten, the lack of teams progressing and a bunch of upsets?
I have no clue. Everyone was saying they were the best college basketball conference. They got what, 9 teams in?
Yep.
I saw something on Twitter that was pretty funny that said, conferences that have the number of teams incorrect in their name, it was like some obscenely terrible record. And then it was like conferences that have the actual number of teams in their name are faring far better. So maybe that's it.
They need to adjust that. There's obviously a couple of theories going around. The Big Ten has been in Indianapolis for their tournament for an extra week ahead. Yep. So some people thought that would be an advantage because they're used to the gyms, but it didn't seem like that. I don't know. It seems like, obviously Jason was hyping them up as the best conference in a long time. But I remember back, I don't know how many years ago this was, but the Big East had a similar number of teams in the tournament, and they similarly, all of their teams, I think I had Georgetown as a number one going winning. I forget which year that was, but I was like, big teams, Big East is the best conference. And so I pushed all the Big East teams forward and had the same results here. So,
yeah, it was a pretty wild, there were some pretty wild games. It was fun to pay attention to them. Some good first round upsets with, Abilene Christian, right? That's the name of the team. They had a good one. UC Santa Barbara within a point. We talked about them last week. Ohio University upsetting Virginia. Obviously, Oral Roberts. Iona gave a good game, like we talked about. It was a pretty fun slate of games. It was a little odd that it was the wraparound Friday to Monday thing. But still, you know, got into it a little bit like we talked about. And now we're down to 16.
Yeah, I think maybe some of the thinking was with no crowds, there will be nobody to kind of get behind the underdog, and maybe the favorites will roll. But I think this has just been such a weird season that weirdness continues to reign. A couple of the teams that went further, like Syracuse, Oregon, and Oregon State, all play kind of a weird zone defense. Obviously, Syracuse plays the most, the best zone defense probably in college basketball. And so those different looks really seems like they threw off some of the bigger teams. And we all saw, I don't know if you watched the Illinois against Loyola Chicago, they tried to run the same thing, high screen over and over again, and it was getting blown up in a double team every single time, and they kept running it. So I think either the coaches didn't get the message, the players didn't get the message. I mean, and maybe the Big Ten teams were kind of like, you know what, we've already been here for 2 weeks. I'm probably ready to go home. But a lot more tournament to go.
Give me your take on Loyola Chicago and Sister Jean.
I am pro Sister Jean.
Yeah. She's 101 years old, man. That's unbelievable.
Yeah. She's still going to the games. And, I mean, if you're 101, you can do anything you want. I don't care. My wife's grandmother is 104. She can do or say whatever she wants. It doesn't matter.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of Sister Jean's. I guess for that reason alone, I'm hoping Loyola goes a little deeper. It'd be fun to see. I don't know if it's ever happened, quite honestly. Oral Roberts win at this point, just because it'd be since they already blasted. Not that I filled out a bracket. Just picked Final Four with you guys. But now that Oral Roberts blew that up, may as well have them keep going. I think here with the 16 teams that are left, I'm pretty much going hard on some of these underdogs. Yeah. It'd be fun to see that happen.
So that begs my next question, I guess, of how many Sweet 16 teams you have in your bracket.
I can tell you that I probably would have had two or three. Not very many. This is the first year I haven't filled out a bracket for for a work pool or anything like that. And I don't mind it. Did you fill one out?
I did fill one out. Yeah. Both.
How's yours doing?
Mine is pretty poor in general. If I'm reading this right, I think I got four or five, teams out of the, 16.
That's got to be the case, like all the way around, right? Like, there's two number one seeds left. Oh no, there are three. Yeah, Gonzaga, the team up
Gonzaga
north,
Gonzaga and Michigan,
and Baylor. Baylor's still in there. Yep. If you had Oral Roberts going into the Sweet 16, then go pick six numbers and play your odds there.
Unless your name is literally Oral Roberts, you probably did not have Oral Roberts in the Sweet 16.
No, and that would be probably the only reason why you would have picked Oral Roberts is if you had the name Oral Roberts.
Yeah.
But I'd like to, I don't know if you, so go ahead and give me a re final for it for me.
Yeah. I mean, I like Gonzaga still. I had them from the jump and I don't think I have seen anything that disproves that. I'll take Alabama to beat Michigan in that bracket. Okay. And I will take, forget it. I'll take Loyola Chicago. They look great.
Yeah. Just for funsies, you got to take them, right?
Yeah. They looked great. They were given flustering teams. They were playing great defense. I mean, there's just so much there. They're a great team. Good, like, veteran leadership. Guys have been to the Final Four, so I'm going to go there. And I'll take number one Baylor out of the ex-Ohio State region.
Ex-Ohio State region. Yeah.
it's them or Arkansas. Probably. Baylor or Arkansas. I'll go with Baylor.
Okay. So I think I'll also take Loyola. And I don't know. I can't bring myself to pick Michigan for anything here.
Alabama looked really good. They looked really good against against Maryland. They went at 96 points they scored. So, you know, there's good options. There's good other options in there. I think Michigan is definitely beatable. They had trouble with LSU there. So, Florida State could take them down.
Florida State looked good too. I guess I like, I also like UCLA. I think they seem to have been playing pretty well. Or the last, you know, they had the play-in game. They beat Michigan State. Sometimes, like that play-in game, it seems like is a good primer. Like gets you, you know, gets you moving.
And a point in your favor around UCLA is like if you're picking a bracket, like you pick the line Michigan State / UCLA. So as long as UCLA is alive, you still
do. You're still good. Does that count for my Final Four pick?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, in that case.
I think they're still alive, yeah.
All right. I've got UCLA. still alive. Yeah, so give me UCLA out of the East or whatever it is. Give me... Jeez. I guess just to be fun about it, give me Creighton out of the West. Give me, let's have some fun with it. Oral Roberts out of the
South. There you go. Bring it on.
And Loyola Chicago out of the Midwest. That's, I mean, look, it's as good as a guess as I had originally.
Sure.
It can't get worse. So,
yeah.
But it was a fun slate of games. I had a good time watching them.
Yeah. So we've got a Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday slate next week, so that one should be interesting. Probably maybe we'll push back our recording so we can watch the games.
There's no Friday.
No Friday. Wow, yeah.
Okay, so interesting. Yeah. I wonder why they did that.
Yeah, I'm not sure. They're putting in some extra games here or some extra time maybe for COVID testing or something like that. There's no travel, so or limited travel, so it must be something with that or who knows. But that should be interesting. We're rolling over into Monday, Tuesday. They can put them all at night, so when there's less games. We will see. You know, there are a couple more weeks to go in that, so very much looking forward to that. Obviously, we are going to continue our preview, our division by division preview. We're getting down to crunch time here. We've got the NL still to go. We'll go ahead and start with the NL East today, Tim. Let me go ahead and tip off the projected standings from Pecota, and then we can kind of walk them down.
Yeah.
So at top of the New York Mets at 92 wins projected, then Washington Nationals at 84 projected wins, then Philadelphia with 84 if you're rounding up, Atlanta with 82, and Miami, who made the playoffs in 2020, at 70 wins. So just get your top line thoughts on the NL East there, Tim.
Well, the Mets definitely did a little work on the lineup to give themselves a shot. I've sort of low key really liked the Mets for a couple of seasons now. I like Michael Conforto a lot. I think he's one of the more underrated players. I have him in our fantasy league that we're both in, and he's a keeper there. I like Brandon Nimmo as well. Yeah. And I always try to draft Francisco Lindor. He's the best for me, the best combination of power and speed that plays a prime position for fantasy. So he's the guy that I always try to get. And he's still young. You know, great trade to pick him up. And then if things have to happen for them to, rotation wise, they've got very good pitchers. They need them to be healthy, is I guess what I'm trying to say.
Right.
So, you know, Jacob DeGrom arguably is the best pitcher in baseball. And then I've always liked Marcus Stroman a lot, a guy that, you know, just as like an undersized guy that, for the most part throws strikes. I have appreciated and liked watching him. So I think he's a good player, player for him. And I don't know, is Noah Syndergaard coming back this year, or is he he's coming back like mid-year, I think. So
right.
From Tommy John. So if you get those three at the top of the rotation, that's a very difficult, you know, and Marcus Stroman's your number three there. That's a difficult staff to compete with. So I also like Edwin Diaz to have a bounce back year. He had really good stats ratios last year. I know he had 2 years ago had a really tough go of it when he first got to New York. But I think he's a premier closer, and I think his numbers are going to come back to normal for him from a few years ago when he was in Seattle.
Right, and the things with those type of relievers is one bad outing messes up their numbers for the entire year. So you know you can have a bad outing, and be fine in your weekly league for, you know, 9 out of your 10 weeks that you had, but blow up one and messes up the number all around. So
now, do you agree with those standings?
I think so. I mean, there's a little bit of a muddle between the Nationals, Phillies, and Atlanta. I mean, I could take either those three in any different direction. And that's kind of reflected in the standing. It's like 84, 84, 83, basically. Right. So they're all pretty tightly packed. I think I could go either way. I mean, the Phillies, they're definitely missing a few things there. The Nationals are still a pretty solid team. And Atlanta obviously is still a very good team. I think there's going to be, because they're all kind of good, there's going to be a natural competition between them all. So they're all going to kind of bring each other's win total down. So that nobody's going to really run away with it. I don't know if New York's even going to get to 92. I think they might win the division, but
that number seems high to me.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if any one of those four teams won this division, to be honest. I do think the Mets with the improved themselves the most, from the last couple seasons. But at the same time, like we said, with injuries, pitching staff, I could see the Phillies easily going out and winning 89, 88 games and taking this division.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's a lot of different ways it could go. I think any of the top four could even win it. Marlins definitely have a chance. Of the other non-Mets teams, is there one player that speaks to you? before we move on from the NL East.
Yeah, another guy I just always love to try to grab is Freddie Freeman. I think he's one of the, I mean, he's obviously an all-star every year. I feel like he sort of gets lost in the mix a little bit with some of the, you know, power hitting first basemen that are out there. So I really like targeting him in fantasy drafts. I think if I had to go on to some of the other rosters and talk about, obviously, I think D.D. Gregorius is a solid, he's solid shortstop to get. And not, he's not a poor man's, why can't I think of his name? I just was talking about him a second ago, Francisco Lindor. He's not like anywhere close to that, but he's a solid shortstop that is going to put up pretty decent numbers. Maybe not as much on the OBP as you want. But I expect him to go out and put up 20 to 25 home runs, maybe possibly get into the high single digit stolen bases. So that's a guy I usually try to target as well. I think, if we're talking Washington, then I don't know. Juan Soto is probably my favorite guy to go get. His antics in the batter's box kind of irritate me, but you know, he's just a machine when it comes to getting on base and hitting for power.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Soto and Acuña are the two headliners in this division amongst young stars. Both are obviously right. Nope, Juan Soto's lefty, I was going to say. Not your cup of tea if they're right-handed. Juan Soto's lefty. So
right, everybody I mentioned was left-handed.
Yeah. I was checking them as you were going through. I was like, okay, this guy has to be left-handed if Tim's mentioning him. So
that's my game.
We're definitely on to you. That is what we'll talk about for the NL East. We have other divisions coming up. One more week to go before the season starts. So we will get our favorite NL Central in, and we will get the NL West as well. All right. On the program today, we are joined by a guest again this week. We've got Ryan Bloomfield. He's from Baseball HQ. He is the 2020 FSWA Baseball Writer of the Year. I'm guessing that's Fantasy Sports Writers Association Baseball Writer of the Year. Is that right, Ryan?
Good guess. You nailed it. Fantasy Sports Writers Association. That is an organization, surprisingly.
Right. Congratulations, first of all, and welcome.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, guys. Thanks, Jeff. Thanks, Tim.
Great having you on, man.
Yeah. So we are obviously, Tim referenced before we were recording, he is a Baseball HQ religious person.
All about it. Every year.
Excellent. We obviously, I have been studying the hashtag Bloomboards, every single player that goes on the Bloomboard, I put it on my spreadsheet. So just to make sure that I tag them. So we are followers of your work, and we appreciate you coming on. So let's just get started a little bit. What do you do at Baseball HQ? What kind of work are you producing?
Yeah. So Baseball HQ, I've been there for about 8 or 9 years, and we've been putting out the forecaster is as old as I am. So this year was the 35th edition of the forecaster, started by Ron Chandler kind of way back when, and that's how I got into fantasy baseball. So I'm an associate editor for that book, which we put out in November, and that whole process starts really at the last pitch of last season. And then I'm just a regular columnist at the site. I write a speculator column that kind of looks at the extremes, the fringes of what players can do. So kind of like that 90th percentile or maybe 10th percentile outcome of if everything breaks right or doesn't break right for a certain player. What could happen in a best or worst case scenario? So those are always fun to write because, at least in fantasy, you get so kind of ingrained in a player and you go to like Fangraphs and you see their player projection and it's just kind of one,
one row of numbers and you think that's what the player is going to do, when in reality these guys are humans and there's just so much else going on, and trying to project that is really hard. So I try and take the kind of the alternate view and look at that. So it's a lot of fun. And then, yeah, active on Twitter at RyanBHQ, and I do put out those Bloom boards almost every day. I try to. Some days are tough, but those are a lot of fun. If you want to follow me on there, I'm putting those out, and great engagement and conversation with those. So glad you guys are following along there as well.
Awesome. So I have a question about the projections, because that's something that I always look at when I'm getting ready for a fantasy draft. I look at the Baseball HQ projections, and I always like how in the descriptions in these, in years past, it's broken down into first half, second half, and there's usually a really good analysis of if a player, did really, say, had a high batting average but low contact rate. It's always nice to see like the breakdown of the numbers from half to half. But this year obviously is different because there really wasn't a half. So I'm looking at it right now. How did these numbers come out? So I'm looking at, say, Eric Hosmer right now, and it's got like second half of 2019 and then second half plus 20. Like how did you guys come to that that measurement to do the projections?
Yeah, this year was just a debacle, right? Because 2020 was just such a small, such a short season, and so many things that happened in 2020. So you look at, Eric Hosmer is actually a really good example. I could talk about him. But you look at like the 2020 season as a whole, right? Just 60 games, just 2 months. A lot of stuff that happens in that 60 game season, in a full 162 gamer, you may not even notice. So like if someone had a hot tear in a full season in June and July, started cold, ended cold, had that kind of summer hot streak, you're probably not going to notice that as much, just because it's such a small kind of reason for the season. And the reason I bring up, or the reason I'm glad you brought up Hosmer, is because there's a lot of talk about like Eric Hosmer's quote unquote launch angle change, and he kind of cut down on ground balls early in the year. I went back and looked at Eric Hosmer in previous seasons, right? He's been around for a while. And if you look at like a 15 game kind of rolling average of how his ground ball rate has been in the last few years, he did what he did in 2020 multiple times in the past. We just never noticed it because it was in the middle of the summer or the end of the year when we're kind of not paying as much attention. It's in the middle of these super long seasons. And so, yeah, there's this microscope on 2020 and just the 2 months of it. And it's just really hard to kind of take 2020 at its, at face value and say, did this guy make actual changes to his approach? Are those changes legit? Or was it just, a 1 month heater, a 6 week heater, and they're going to regress back down? I mean, I don't really have a right answer, and it's all kind of case by case, but that's the challenge that we're all kind of dealing with right now. Last weekend and this weekend as our fantasy drafts, kick into high gear. So it's tough. It's a challenge, but it's a heck of a lot of fun to try and figure out.
So now on that, which of these, like, I know for at Baseball HQ, a lot of the underlying, they encourage you to look at the underlying statistics, or I don't know if that's what you guys call them. That's what I'm calling them. Like, walk percentage, contact percentage for hitters. I know that there's a strategy in Baseball HQ that says don't draft anybody that has a lower contact percentage than I think it's 75 or 80%, and you're guaranteed to have a good batting average floor. Always look for walk percentages that are above 10%. Can we put faith in those, or and then for pitchers, like K strikeout to walk ratio, can we put faith in those ratios from last season, do you think?
I think it's still tough. It's easy to look at somebody's contact rate or walk rate and think, those underlying numbers stabilize quickly, but those things those things fluctuate just like your kind of surface stats, your batting average, your runs, your RBI. So it's really tough to draw conclusions from a 2-month sample. I mean, it's even tough sometimes to draw conclusions from a full season. But that's the challenge that we have. I think on the pitching side, it's a little bit, and this is kind of more to where kind of the industry is going, but it's a little bit, I don't want to say easier, but there's a lot more data available. So you look at somebody like a Zach Plesac, who
Jeff's boy.
Oh my guy.
Oh, you're a fan or not a fan, Jeff?
He just decided to not keep him in our keeper league.
Oh okay. Man, that was painful.
Well, the deadline is Thursday, so change.
I could change my mind several times.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So like, just make an example. Him, like Corbin Burns is another example. But these are guys who Plesac specifically had. He only made 8 starts last year, right? He had that COVID protocol violation with Clevinger or whatever, missed kind of the middle of the season. So how much stock can you put in an 8-game or an 8-start season? Like typically not much, right? I mean, that you're looking at, again, like a 6-week stretch in the summer that a lot of times doesn't get that much attention. On the flip side, though, you look at Zach Plesac, he totally reinvented himself last year. You look at the pitch mix change. He's one of those kind of Cleveland transformation projects, the Corey Kluber, the Shane Bieber. Plesac's kind of that next guy. And so on the pitching side, I do look at, how did those pitchers change their approach last year? Did they fade their fastball? Did they throw more of their best pitches, their sliders, their cutters, their changeups, whatever it may be? And in Plesac's case, he really did reinvent himself last year. That's a good strike in the right direction for somebody like Plesac, even though it was 8 starts. At least we have on the pitching side that ability to kind of dive a little bit deeper into the individual pitches and approach changes that they're making. So like for me personally, I'm kind of buying into what Zach Plesac did last year. I mean, to the extent of what he did in 2020 is not going to happen again, but I think he's like a legit 350 ERA guy on a team with Cleveland that typically pushes their starting pitchers a little bit deeper into games compared to other teams. So if you're making that keeper decision on Plesac, I don't know the rest of the parameters there, but I am kind of a pro Plesac just because, despite the small sample there, there's legitimate evidence that he changed his approach and it worked really well for him last year.
Did you write his little blurb? Because it says almost exactly what you just said.
I did. If you look at the bottom of that page on Baseball HQ's forecaster,
there it is.
My name's in all caps at the bottom there. So I like to use that example because I feel like I know what I'm talking about there. So
that's a good one. All right. I love these blurbs. And there was one last year. Sorry, I know I'm hogging all the questions, Jeff.
No, go ahead.
There was one last year for who was it? It was one of the best. Please tell me this was you. It was a Big Lebowski reference. Who was it?
It was not
JD
me.
Martinez. JD Martinez. Yeah. It said, "Sometimes there's a man." Sometimes I got a kick out of that one.
That was not me, but yeah, we do try and throw in some humor because honestly, I mean, we love this game, but like at a certain point, you're looking at a lot of numbers, especially in fantasy. Like you're looking at a lot of numbers, and you got to try and mix it up a little bit. But no, I did not do JD Martinez. I think my favorite one last year that I did was comping Nick Markakis to a dishwasher, an old dishwasher.
That's I'll have to go back and look at that one.
You never like him. You're never thrilled with him, but always comes through, right? Always cleans the dishes. And then I guess he retired. So
that, yeah.
Dishwasher kind of died. But
Jeff, do you remember Joe Thurston, who played for the Cardinals for a couple of years?
Yeah.
One of my favorite baseball forecaster blurbs was whoever wrote, "We have a decision to make in this book whether or not we should spend time on players like Joe Thurston or not." it was perfect for that player. So I get a kick out of reading those almost as much as I get as looking at the stats.
Yeah. Those are the tough guys to write about, actually. I mean, especially some of these pitchers, like middle relievers that may or may not be fantasy relevant, depending on me. Some of these fantasy leagues are, I was just in a draft in Toutwards this past weekend. That's a, it's 12 teams, but it's American League only. So it's like pretty much anyone with a pulse is draftable. So, you know, it's easy to kind of write about the Mike Trouts, the Xander Bogarts, that sort of thing. But you get into the Joe Thurstons and whoever the hell else in the, at the end, it's, it, you gotta stretch a little bit.
Yeah, and I play in a bunch of those really deep leagues, 55-man roster leagues, and I appreciate that when the ADP starts going over 500, that's when I start to get interested, because then I'll know that maybe that guy will be available for me when the picks come around for me. Most of them are dynasty, so you know, I'm looking for mining for gold in different ways. I'm trying to find the pitcher that's going to actually show up. Any starts that give me a chance at a quality start is exactly what I'm looking for.
Exactly.
I'm looking through your bloom boards here a little bit, because you know, a lot of these guys like Plesac are the guys that I like looking at. One of them that, you know, kind of goes back to what you're saying about 2020 is that you had the starting pitchers with gains in first pitch strike and swinging strike. I love first pitch strike, as Tim knows.
Love first pitch strikes.
Guys that throw a ball on the first pitch, it just makes me insane. I can't watch them. So, you know, has a bunch of guys on that list that I really like Plesac, Musgrove, Yarbrough, Davies, obviously Adam Wainwright. We're both Cardinals fans. So, you know, those are the, and actually your ADP goes to 734 in that one for Gio Gonzalez. So
can't totally recommend Gio Gonzalez, but yeah, you are digging deep. And even Josh Tomlin with an unknown ADP.
Yeah. Hey, that works. I'll mine for anybody. Is I guess thinking about these bloom boards, what, you know, they're all super informative. Is there one or one that you found that historically means the most, like a change or you know, looking for sleepers?
Yeah, on the pitching side, I'm gonna kind of say the same thing, but I do a lot of boards that look at pitch mix changes, just because I'm a firm believer that tangible changes in approach, you're more willing to trust what you most recently saw. And especially in 2020, so that Plesac example. On the hitting side, what I like to look at are strikeout and barrel rate. If there's two metrics you want to look at to evaluate hitters, it's, you know, one, do they put the ball in play, right? Do they make contact? And so that's pretty easy to look up. That strikeout rate, you can find that on FanGraphs. HQ calls it contact rate. It's kind of the same thing. It's just basically how often are you putting that ball in play. And then on the other side, when you do put it in play, what's the quality of that contact? And I'm a firm believer in some of the, you know, a lot of this StatCast stuff is very complex. There's all kinds of information out there. But if there's one metric you want to look at, and this has been kind of, you know, tried and true and proven in a lot of, you know, really good research in the industry, is for power, it's really all about barrel rate, which is how hard are you hitting the ball and at what trajectory are you hitting that ball? You can be, for example, like a Vlad Guerrero Jr. who hits the crap out of the ball, but so far has hit it on the ground. And that obviously ground balls can't be home runs, but barrel rate just kind of looks at that sweet spot of hitting the ball hard and hitting it at the right angle to play into power. So those, if you're looking at two things that, you know, you want to keep it simple and go with it that way, strikeout rate and barrel rate. So I'll do a lot of boards around those two metrics. Just looking at either like in the last year or two, guys who are above or below certain thresholds. But then like you guys were mentioning with this kind of improvement, I want to look at guys who improved in strikeout rate and barrel rate in 2020, because those are kind of the raw hitting skills, the raw talent that we're trying to pick up on and just ignore the surface stats like batting average and home runs. I want to take a guy who's putting it in play, making hard contact. The results may or may not be there. I don't know. But ignore that and focus on those guys with that kind of raw talent. So those are a lot of the things. And it's interesting. You'll see a lot of these boards. It'll be like a list of 15 guys, and the top eight are like a Freddie Freeman or Juan Soto, which you guys were just talking about. And so you're kind of like, yeah, I mean, that validates my list. Like, I would expect those guys at the top. You dig a little bit at the bottom of that list in terms of ADP or average draft position, which is where kind of the market is taking these players for fantasy. You look at guys like a CJ Crone and you're like, whoa, okay, I wouldn't expect to see him there. Dig a little bit deeper. Obviously, Crone's with Colorado. Like, I'm a big CJ Crone fan for this year just because he has those skills and now has a job and is in Colorado, which always helps. So it's looking at those indicators, those underlying raw skills, and trying to group players together and put it out there for people to kind of take that deeper dive into certain guys.
So go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, just one more thing on that is what you mentioned on the Bloom board about the hitters that have improved their K rate and their barrels. Is that next to Randall Grichuk, ex-Cardinal, who I still quite like, is that you said draft skills, not roles, which I try to do for all my teams, is that, you know, you really want a guy that's playing every day, but I'd rather have the best player because eventually that best player will be playing every day.
Right, and that's true mostly with the bullpen especially, right?
Yeah, and I mean, we're already, because again, long season, but like, injuries unfortunately are going to happen. We saw that today. Like, Toronto's team is almost decimated, and so people were so into that Grichuk example. A lot of people in fantasy in the industry were worried about Randall Grichuk and Rowdy Tellez, who have the skills, but Toronto's so crowded that they might not play. But it always kind of works out. Like, George Springer has that oblique strain now. You know, who knows what else is gonna happen over the course of a long season. So yeah, that's one of kind of our long-standing tenets, is to take the guys who have the skills, and if they don't have a role, they're gonna be pretty cheap in fantasy. And over time, the skills ultimately win, especially for the batters, and especially when you factor in injuries as well. So we've been successful with that mantra, and we try and spread that word as much as possible.
So Ryan, I got turned on to Baseball Forecaster by reading a book called Fantasyland, which pretty prominently featured Ron Chandler. And I remember the big strategy that was in that book, and it's been in every Baseball Forecaster. There's a little line in all the blurbs, is the Lima plan. Can you tell us about that? And are you a believer in that?
Yeah. First off, that's awesome. You mentioned Fantasyland, because that's how I got into fantasy back in the day. That book was just incredible, and they did a documentary too. I don't know if you saw. I don't know if you watched that as well.
I haven't. No, I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, it's I'll have to figure out where to find it, but I've seen it a few times, and it's kind of like it. You know, it was a different plot line, but it was the same general theme, like featured Ron Chandler and went to Tout Wars. And yeah, it was the video version of it. So it was really cool. But yeah, that's how I got into the game way back when. But yeah, the Lima plan was almost one of the like early strategies that popularized Ron and Baseball HQ, low innings mound aces. And so basically that plan was kind of what I was talking about with draft skills, not roles, is take the guys who aren't projected to either be in a starting rotation or rack up a ton of innings, but who have the high strikeout rates, who have the low walk rates, who have the high ground ball rates, those underlying foundational skills that we're looking for that are good indicators of surface level results. And so it's kind of coming back. I mean, that's almost a 20-year-old plan. Actually, it's over 20 years old now.
Well, Jose Lima is named after him, right? He's long been out, right? Is that?
Yeah, the late Jose Lima. I mean, that was the guy who was on the fringe of the Houston Astros rotation was cheap, free in drafts, and take him, and then he falls into a rotation spot, and you let those skills head out. So in 2021, it's kind of almost coming full circle, because there's a lot of talk in the game around six-man rotations, about coming off of a short season, of limiting starting pitcher workloads. The top starting pitchers are not going to be throwing in general. There's going to be a few guys who go over 200 innings and that sort of thing, like a Garrett Cole, a DeGrom, if he's healthy, that type of thing. But most of your starting pitchers, it sounds like, aren't going to go much over 180 innings. So if you look at a guy like, I'm trying to think of an example, like a Corbin Burns, a Walker Buehler, who are traditionally more in like the 160 inning range, typically you kind of poo-poo those guys because they don't have that volume. But in 2021, I think there's even more of an emphasis on starting pitchers who, on a per-inning basis, have the skills to thrive. And even like you look at a lot of guys gaining heat are like Freddie Peralta, TJ Anthony, who may or may not make the rotation, but might pitch 5 or 6 innings a week out of a long relief role. And over time, over a full season, you put up those elite ratios, 5, 6 innings a week, throw in a few wins and a ton of strikeouts. Like that's super valuable. So, that Lima plan, that low inning Mount Aces plan is, it's funny how things are kind of cyclical, and it's kind of been a forefront of some of the conversation entering 2021, just because it's going to be hard to see so many guys going over 200 innings, given the light workload last year.
Yeah, it's a strategy that, generally speaking, I think it's we do the league that Jeff and I are in is a we do a snake draft, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think the Lima plan suggests like you don't need to be spending your top 5, top even 10 draft picks on starting pitchers. You should be focusing elsewhere, and you can get those guys that have those ratios that will ultimately prop up your pitching staff a lot later on in the draft.
Yeah, that's the general tenet. The one like kind of update I would make to that is in recent seasons, like the cream of the crop starting pitchers have separated themselves even further from the pack. So like obviously with the juice ball and that sort of thing, the run scoring environment is a lot, you know, is a lot higher than it used to be. But a lot of that damage is being done to like the back end of the starting pitcher pool. So a lot of times what we're recommending is to take that early starting pitcher, that Garrett Cole, that DeGrom, that Bieber, Darvish, whoever you might like. I personally like Aaron Nola as a my top guy behind that kind of top tier. Take that top guy because they do separate themselves from the pack, but then fill them in with those cheap pitching values, and then just pound the crap out of hitting in between, because the industry as a whole for fantasy is shifting towards taking pitchers early. And the more that you kind of deviate from the norm, the better. And that's a good way to do that.
Yeah. Sounds good.
All right. This is awesome, Ryan. Some super good information. Obviously I'm going to have to listen to this over again and make sure I have all of the data that you've dropped here for my upcoming drafts and my scouring of the waiver wire. Before we let you go, Ryan, is there anything else you want to talk about? You want to push tout wars?
I appreciate you guys having me on. I mean, it's been it's just nice to be looking at a full season again. Like last year was just so rough with obviously with the shutdown, and obviously baseball is like the least important thing with everything that was going on last year. But last year was rough in terms of the shutdown, the labor dispute, and just getting 60 games. So it's nice to be able to get a full 162 gamer, it looks like. And yeah, play ball. Good luck in your drafts. I know, like, it's funny, the timing of these, especially these fantasy drafts, is so important. We had Tout Wars was all last weekend, and typically we go to New York City to do the auctions, to do the drafts and that sort of thing. This year it's still all online. But then, yeah, you draft all these guys last week, and then just today, like the rash of injuries that have hit with Gallen and a lot of the Blue Jays guys, Springer, Robbie Ray, I guess, fell down a flight of stairs, which does not sound ideal for your pitching arm. But stay on top of that, especially if you're drafting like next weekend. Stay on top of that injury news, and that's going to be super important heading into drafts. But good luck to both. I guess I can't wish you both luck if you're in the same league, but I hope one of you two comes out.
We're friendly. We're friendly. I like it
way
wins.
Longer than Jeff, so it's obviously rooting for me, Ryan, right? I mean, come on.
It's I'll funny. I'm, Jeff, a, wins, I'm happy.
Yeah. I'm Jeff, in a Jeff home is league. My adversary in this league.
That's
we,
awesome.
We work together a little bit, yeah. just to make sure we like to have fun. So it's collegial. It's collegial.
I'm in a local league here in Oregon, and we're drafting this coming weekend. And it's funny, like in previous years, not everyone, but probably half the league would come to the auction table. We would just meet at our buddy's house. And like, hey, yeah, half the people would come there with forecasters and they, Bloomfield, what'd you say about this guy? They just all give me a bunch of crap about, being in the book and that sort of thing. Real quick before you go,
give me your victory lap, like the player that you like called the best, in the last few years that you saw a pot of gold there where no one else did. And then maybe the opposite too. Like, what's the one you wish you had back on like a player recommendation?
Cool. Yeah. Good question. Yeah. Cause we love to tout the guy we hit, but we don't like to talk about the ones we missed. Going back to the Bloom boards, there was kind of a side thing called we were calling them Maeda boards. Cause Kenta Maeda would show up on like every single kind of list of stat filters and skill filters that I would put up. And it finally happened last year. Like Kenta Maeda won people a lot of leagues. So I'll take credit for that one.
That's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah, he's free from LA, switched up his pitch mix last year. And I feel pretty good about him for 2021 again. I think he had like a 0.75 whip last year, which is never going to, you're never going to do that again, but he'll be fine. Probably one of the bigger ones I've missed on. Last year I was, and maybe I'll take the COVID pass on this, but I was all over Austin Meadows last year. Like I thought he was going to be legit and did not. Like I put in the forecaster that he would be a first round pick in 2021 last year. And that obviously didn't turn out. Just had an awful season last year. I still think there's some rebound potential for Austin Meadows, but that's definitely someone who I preached to get early in drafts and completely fell on their face last year. So sorry to anyone who followed that advice. We all get some things wrong and we get some right as well. So you got to take the good with the bad.
I like that as a bounce back pick for this year, though. That's somebody that's on my radar.
It could be. Yeah. I mean, he's healthy. He's crushing it this spring. So early signs are good. So
keep it up.
Cool. All right, Ryan. Thanks so much for coming on. We really appreciate it. We will keep our eye on the Bloom boards and keep following your writing. We appreciate it.
Sounds good, fellas. Have a good one. Thanks.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thanks. All right, Tim. That was an awesome interview with Ryan. I definitely could have. I say this for all of our guests because all of our guests are great, but I definitely could have talked to him for like at least 30 more minutes. I want to detail. I probably should just get that book. The book
is awesome, man. Yeah. I've been getting it. Man, since we were roommates, so that's a long time. It's got the blurbs are fun. It's got like a little strategy section at the beginning. It provides different tiers for players. Like it's got all the different stats that you'd want all in one place. And it's usually what I go to figure out who I want to target in the draft.
Yeah, no, that's good. I have the baseball prospectus one, but I definitely need one that maybe is a little bit more fantasy oriented. So may have to pick that up just so that I can have all that data right in front of me during the draft.
And like I said, I've pretty much molded my fantasy baseball strategy off of what they've put, the strategies that they put in. He mentioned, we talked about the Lima plan.
Right.
They've got a couple other different strategies that are in there about what players to target, which ones to try to avoid. And, it ends up crossing out some big name guys that a lot of people try to go get, cause one of the things they say is like, make sure you target a contact rate. I think it's 75%, no less than 75%. So you might, if you stick to that, you're going to miss out on the guy that hits 40 home runs and only makes contact 70% of the time.
Right.
But it all
Joey Gallo's of the world.
But it really does all even out, if not turn out better for you in the end, because there's enough guys that are out there, they're going to hit 25 home runs and put the ball in play a little bit more, so they'll have a higher batting average floor. It's a good book with some fun strategies. I haven't read it as detailed the last few years as I used to, but it's definitely a get for me every year.
Yep, absolutely. So with that, our fantasy baseball and baseball related discussion today, looking forward a week to our next recording date, what are you keeping your eye on?
Well, I better get my eye on the baseball forecaster, because we have a fantasy draft on Saturday. Is it Saturday or Sunday?
Sunday, I think.
Sunday. I should probably know the date. We have a fantasy draft on Sunday, and I've done the only research I've done is talking to Ryan right now. So
yeah. This counts. It counts
on that. Yeah, this was a start. It was good.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So I'm with you on that. I'm going to be in alignment. Obviously, the March Madness continues next weekend. But I will stick with you on that. So keep your eye on the fantasy baseball projections and blurbs, and keep your ears glued to Dynasty Sports Empire, the podcast. And we will talk to you next week.
Sounds good, Jeff. You got it, man.
All right.
All right. Give me a name of somebody who you want to hear the blurb for.
Yeah, let's blurb it up. Nathan Eovaldi. Traded for him in one of my Dynasty Sports Empire leagues.
All right.
Needed some pitching.
Okay. Solid results sandwiched a 2-week IL stint for calf, notably not off injured elbow. Submetrics back it up. Career best K percentage, walk percentage, swing, strike percentage, and superb ground ball to fly ball ratio. Indications are he ended the year healthy. Three post IL starts yielded 19 strikeouts, 1 walk, 99 mile per hour average fastball. Pay for 100 strong innings. So there you go, right there.
There you go. He was on the bloom board for throw strikes, miss bats, and keep it on the ground. Those are the kind of pitchers that I look for.
That's who you want, man.
Yeah, one of those near the top is DeGrom, Bieber, and Nola, obviously, that he referenced at the top. So, well, he's around 230, so he'll be near the end of the draft. Yeah. One of the guys I grab as a flyer. Truce. We'll do a truce on that one.
Yeah,
so
good.
You can send me one name, and I'll keep my hands off that guy.
Okay. All right. That's a fair strategy right there.
Yeah.
All right.
Nobody's listening this far. No, there's no collusion here. Nothing to see here. Please move on.
This is the outro music anyway.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.